You are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay originally aired on November 30th, 2001.
I was recently contacted by a college student whose professor had assigned her to do a brief video segment on natural signs that predict a severe winter. What signs in the world around us predict that the winter will be challenging or mild? I told her at that time that I didn't know of any which I had much faith in. Plants and animals, I said, respond to exceptionally severe weather by behavioral change, not by pre-preparation. No sooner had I spoken than I realized that this was only half-truth. Plants and wildlife regularly prepare for winter. Deciduous woody plants drop their leaves and waterproof the scars. Herbaceous perennials die back to rootstocks or ground-hugging rosettes. Some plants leave nothing but seeds to overwinter. Wildlife change their clothes, including both color and density of underfur or down. They acquire layers of fat which provide both insulation and energy, and they often change diets to boost heat and fat production. Still, I've never seen concrete evidence of any prescience about the severity of the season ahead. I have known trappers and outdoorsmen who believe differently. They try to show me signs which they believe predicted the mildness or severity of winters. I was never convinced. One common indicator is said to be the broadness of the black bands on the Isabella tiger moth, a woolly bear. When I was teaching biology at Oswego, I had students bring in woolly bear caterpillars. Our measurements were contradictory. They didn't fit any helpful pattern. Some scientists say that the difference in bandwidth is genetic, or depends on the age of the caterpillar. Stemming from a time when weather instruments were much simpler than our modern hardware, these omens were important. Even the best-educated ancients quoted them. Lacking a true picture of the movements and the energy systems at work, early weathermen, that was anyone with a special sensitivity or keenness of observation, depended on folklore and their own observations. The most scientific thinkers were probably most accurate, and we presume the least likely to blindly adopt tradition. Still, early American society had a vast arsenal of omens. At a naturalist conference in the Blue Ridge Mountains, I discussed weather prognostication with a local sociologist. She said, "Omens are part of life in the mountains." Some of them, she believed, were quite accurate in short-term prognostication, but she, too, was skeptical about the long-term. To illustrate her point about the widespread use of omens, she showed me a list of 4 dozen indicators of rain, which at least some of her neighbors swore by. They included the following. Grumpiness and depression precede rain. Aching joints, bones, muscles, or corns predict the approach of a storm system. If a rooster crows at night, it will rain before morning. If clouds hide the sunset, it will rain the next day. For long-term predictions, she had some fascinating and revealing examples, a few of which were only in the province of the true mystic. For instance, count the number and intensity of fogs in August, and you can determine the number and severity of snowstorms the following winter. Or in the northern stretches of the mountains, every day above 100 degrees in July predicts one day below zero the following winter. Planting by the phases of the moon or preparing for the winter ahead based on the movements of butterflies and birds seem pretty ridiculous today. Our ancestors, however, had a limited inventory of weather signs. Since weather systems moved across the country faster than the mail, there was no way to use prevailing storm paths in predicting more than 24 hours ahead. Benjamin Franklin and some of his scientist friends sensed that storms follow predictable or at least characteristic pathways, but there was no way of putting it to use until the establishment of the telegraph speeded communications decades later. Today, we let a computer digest data and suggest possibilities, but we still miss the boat sometimes. It seems that weather is no less capricious because we know its inner workings better. They say that meteorology is the only profession where a person gets paid for being wrong more often than being right. That's way too cynical for me. I think meteorologists do a pretty remarkable job, and I take a lot of pleasure in observing their enthusiasm for their work. Still, their rhetoric falls short of the poetry in this mountain verse. When buzzards fly and robins sing, I know in my heart it must be spring. Or, red in the morning, sailor take warning. Red at night, sailor's delight. Check that last one out in the 16th chapter of Matthew. Well, that's all I have for today. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.